Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for being with us on this Friday. After 3 years and thousands testifying for and against the project, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission granted a certificate of need for Enbridge Energy's aging Line 3 pipeline. The 1960s-era pipeline carries up to 390,000 barrels of oil per day from Canada to Enbridge's terminal here in Superior. Commissioners say the line is in horrific condition and poses a danger to environmental and cultural lands. The commission also settled on Enbridge's preferred route for the replacement pipeline while preventing the line from running through the Big Sandy Lake area, a place that Minnesota tribal members refer to as their wounded knee. Winona LaDuke is an activist and member of the White Earth Nation. She's also co-founder of the organization Honor the Earth. She spoke with me by phone yesterday about the commission's decision to move the project forward.
You know, it's unprecedented that they would go against both the administrative law judge and the Department of Commerce ruling. And, you know, so it's perplexing to me why the system did not work in Minnesota. I had hoped it would. I spent 5 years, 68,000 people testified. You know, the system should have worked here and it didn't.
Well, what do you say about the commissioners? You know, they said during their deliberations today that their hands were tied and they had limited authority, that they had to make this decision.
That was totally untrue. They could have not issued that certificate of need because a certificate of need required a balancing of the needs and the, you know, of Minnesota and this corporation. And this impact, if the impact of issuing a certificate of need outweighed the commercial interests of the Enbridge Corporation, there is no reason this should have been issued. In addition to that, Enbridge, which obviously is very big and, you know, was the oil for the Husky refinery, the Enbridge Corporation, you know, has a leaky pipe. Now, a good corporate citizen cleans up its leaky pipe. It doesn't say, I want a new pipe. You know, give me a new pipe. And they acted as if the Enbridge Corporation had a gun to their head, and they could have moved the gun away, but they chose to engage in their part in the Stockholm syndrome, which is what we just saw happening. Super, you know, really disappointing for civil society in Minnesota. I wanted civil society to work, and what I will say is that civil society has broken down in Minnesota, as well as, from what I could see, much of the rest of the country.
Well, they had made an argument that they had to go about this because of the condition of the pipeline right now and, you know, all of the corrosion that we're seeing. Thousands of...
A prudent corporate citizen would have closed down their line. You know, the fact is that they told their shareholders that as a last-ditch effort, they could move 500,000 barrels of oil, you know, through the existing lines by, you know, turning one of them. And the Southern Lights, they could have turned that one, and then they would have, you know, 500,000 barrels of oil. But instead, they persisted, you know, with this, because this is the only, you know, there is no way to get the tar sands oil into the United States. You know, every other pipeline has been defeated. The fact is that nobody actually wants a tar sands pipeline. You know, I mean, the fact is that the Energy East pipeline was canceled. That was the longest pipeline. That was to go through, like, you know, Montreal and Quebec. That one was canceled in Canada. The Northern Gateway Pipeline, Enbridge did not get the Northern Gateway Pipeline. That was not approved by the National Energy Board. The Keystone XL Pipeline has no shippers and no route permit. And then finally, you know, we have two pipelines left. One is called, the Trans Mountain Kinder Morgan Pipeline. And about 3 weeks ago, the Canadian government had to buy that pipeline from Kinder Morgan for $4.5 billion to be paid for by the taxpayers of Canada, because they cannot get that pipeline through, and now we have Line 3. You know, they have unleashed basically a civil war in northern Minnesota, and I am not looking forward to it.
So what is the next step? I know that you've said that you will look towards any kind of regulatory action that you can seek out, but what are you going to be planning now?
Yeah, I mean, we will use every legal and regulatory remedy that is available to us in the state of Minnesota and hope that we can stop the pipeline through those mechanisms. You know, that is my hope, is that we will solve this in a regulatory mechanism. But this was their chance today. You know, I am now preparing for an assault on my homeland. Enbridge already has pipe yards throughout northern Minnesota, and they also already have clear cuts upon the land where they wish to lay the pipeline. You know, they have already encroached upon our territory prior to the issuance of any permit, and now they will go much further, we are sure of it. You know, and so I am very deeply concerned about the future of civil society in northern Minnesota, and not just for the Ojibwe people, but for all people, because, you know, it is other people's children, non-native people who are coming to the North Country in great numbers. We have a campaign which is to welcome water protectors. In northern Minnesota, it's a tourist economy, and we welcome hunters, and we welcome fishermen, and now we welcome water protectors. And on July 22nd at Bayfront, we will have a Water is Life concert featuring the Indigo Girls, and I invite everyone to come join us. And from there, we will launch on our ride across northern Minnesota, love water, not oil, because that is what we believe.
I guess, are we going to see another Standing Rock as a result of this decision?
Well, you know, there's two things. This is, you know, they chose to run a pipe through the equivalent of our wounded knee, where 400 Ojibwe people perished on Sandy Lake when they were forced, starved, to come for their rations. 400 of our people sit there, and that's where they would like to put the pipe. You know, so they have come into the heart of our territory where our loved ones have died because they were treated so poorly the last time by the government. You know, so that is where they have chosen. So I will tell you that that is not something that we are going to stand for. And then, you know, we have given them every opportunity to do the right thing. But, you know, Minnesota has asked many times to not have Standing Rock, but this, they have brought Standing Rock to them. And this is Enbridge's Standing Rock, and this will be Minnesota's Standing Rock. Now, it's going to look different, and the reason it's going to look different is that there are pipe yards throughout northern Minnesota, and there is not a single pipe that is ready. And so, that is in place. And so I will tell you something that you probably know. I'm not going to sit there and wait for them to come to me. I will be there in the front with my sisters and brothers and all of your children saying that this pipe will not happen. You know, and so it will look different because we are throughout the Northern Territory.
So you're planning protests all along these pipe yards.
I mean, there are 7 pipe yards. Why would I sit and wait? You know, there is plenty of things to do in the meantime, and you know, but we are preparing. We are preparing. And many people are coming. There is hundreds of public camps along the proposed pipeline route. You don't need to go to Standing Rock and figure out how to wash yourself because there is improved campgrounds along the proposed pipeline route, and we now intend to mobilize towards them. And as well, the fact is that over half of this pipe is to be laid upon public land. And on public land in the state of Minnesota, as in Wisconsin, you can camp for up to 2 weeks without a permit. I intend to camp. And as an Anishinaabe person, I will camp longer because it is my territory.
Is there anything that I'm missing that you feel is important to add related to this?
Yeah, I mean, what I will tell you is that what you know, which is that this pipe is the one that will feeds both the Husky refinery where the explosion was and also will feed into what Enbridge proposes is the twinning of the lines. You know, they needed this oil to twin the lines in Wisconsin, and now they believe they have it. And we will fight to keep oil from going into Wisconsin. You know, we are hoping Wisconsin comes join us.
Again, you were just listening to Winona LaDuke, White Earth Nation member and co-founder of Honor the Earth. While many expressed outrage over the commission's decision, others hailed the move as a victory that would bring increased prosperity and safety to the region. We reached out to Enbridge for an interview. They sent us a prepared statement from President and CEO Al Monaco. In it, he said, quote, "We are very pleased that the PUC has determined the Line 3 replacement project is needed for Minnesota. Replacing Line 3 is first and foremost about the safety and integrity of this critical energy infrastructure. This project will also help ensure Minnesota and area refineries reliably receive the crude oil supply they need for the benefit of all Minnesotans and the surrounding region." Unquote. Supporters of the project agree, including Brian Hansen. He's the CEO of APEX, or the Area Partnership for Economic Expansion, which serves 84 members in a 10-county region across northern Minnesota and Wisconsin. He spoke with me yesterday by phone from Milwaukee about why the Line 3 replacement will benefit the area.
Well, it's another significant milestone in the process. There's still obviously the vote to come on the routing, but just certifying that, yes, there's a need that exists to do this project, so it really makes sense for us as a state and for the long-term energy supply needs of the country is very significant. And, you know, in terms of our members, Enbridge is a member, and then there's many other members who provide extensive services in the engineering area, construction, maintenance, sort of all facets. So It's a very important project for our region's economy.
Well, and one of the things that the commissioners pointed out in their deliberations over the project is that they weren't necessarily sold on the fact of whether Enbridge had proved that there was, in fact, a need for the oil, as much as they were concerned about the condition of the existing line in the ground. I guess how important is it that, as far as safety and integrity of transportation in the region, to see that line addressed?
Well, spills have happened in the past, regrettably, and we know that that is a very bad thing for our communities and for the environment. And so having the safest and most efficient pipeline possible is really important to everyone. I guess I would probably argue with the commissioners a little bit in terms of the need for the energy. I believe we do have a long-term need for it, even though we are doing a great job of diversifying our energy mix. We're also growing as a region and as a nation, and it's great to have North American energy independence. And we will be using liquid fuels in the future. So if I would prefer those liquid fuels to come from North America versus other places around the globe and the unrest that surrounds that.
Well, and recently, too, related to this particular project, Enbridge has said that they would work with landowners who were interested in removing the existing pipeline, because before they had just suggested leaving it in the ground and capping it off and cleaning it. I guess, what's your take on that as far as, you know, because I imagine if landowners are requesting to have that pipeline removed, that would mean more work for some of your members, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's it will add to the cost of the project, I'm quite sure, and it will also mean more work for those contractors. I just hope that from a safety standpoint, which was the key objection I think Enbridge had, was that it creates a safety situation in some cases where a potential strike on a line or other things. You can train and try and provide the safest possible workplace, but accidents do happen. Humans are involved, and so I just hope that never that doesn't happen as part of this removal. But I understand that the company is really responding to some of the concerns of citizens who did own land with pipe on it. They wanted it removed, and so good for them for being responsive. And I do think it'll create jobs along with the replacement of the existing. So overall, it's probably a very good thing in the eyes of those landowners who want it to be gone. And I believe it can be done safely, but it presents an additional area of risk.
One of the things that environmentalists and tribal members have raised is the risk of a spill related to the existing Line 3 pipeline or any other pipeline that would be placed there. Obviously, they oppose this project and don't want to see it move forward. And a legal challenge is expected now, given this decision. How confident are you that this project will move forward? I mean, do you think that we'll see a protracted legal debate on this?
Well, we will see a legal debate. There's no question. Hopefully it's not protracted. I mean, there's a reason why these commissioners voted unanimously that the need was there. And I think that's because the need is there, and that can and has been demonstrated by the company. So the next step that is available to opponents in the process is a legal battle, and I'm quite sure they'll probably take advantage of that as part of the process and go for it. But I believe that the project does stand on its own merits. The replacement is important. It is a safety and integrity issue for the entire pipeline system, and so they'll move forward in a logical fashion and following the existing process. But I believe ultimately the line will be replaced.
And if it were not to happen for some reason, how would that impact your members?
Well, there's certainly the last time and effort toward doing the replacement project. There will be additional maintenance needs then on the existing Line 3. which we heard could go on for quite a while. We heard at the hearings on, I believe that was Tuesday. I guess the biggest impact is that we're going to lose out on the revenue associated with $25 million that would go to state and local tax coffers from having a new line installed. And we're gonna lose out on the capacity of the line that will be improved along with the replacement. And that's important to members as well. So, you know, there's lots of different impacts. You can sort of make some lemonade with lemons on some of those negative things, but if it doesn't move forward overall, it's a negative.
And do you think that there was at all any opportunity for common ground on this with those who oppose this project?
Well, I wish there had been. The folks who were involved in the opposition would get really offended if anybody pointed out that, hey, you all drove here too. We need these liquid fuels. And they would say, don't tell me about that. We're going to change the world with this project. But, you know, in fact, to me, I think the liquid fuels are going to continue for a while. And that it's too bad that they couldn't see the value of improved integrity, improved security, a brand new line that has much more, you know, state-of-the-art monitoring compared to 40- and 50-year-old technology on the monitoring. I'm sure there have been periodic technology updates in places like substations, pump stations, et cetera, but there's really no escaping the fact that it's going to be built with state-of-the-art methods, and the state-of-the-art today is far exceeds what was there 50, 60 years ago. So I think it's really important that we do the project for those reasons.
Well, and what about their
common ground could have been, I think perhaps it became too divisive and too absolutely no early on, whereas the company has said, yes, and here's things that we're going to do. They've been flexible throughout the process, suggesting that, yeah, we'll remove pipe where it's needed. That kind of flexibility has been expressed by the company for the project, but we haven't heard a lot of flexibility from the folks who are no's. The opposition has just been pretty purely no.
Well, what about their concerns about the, you know, contribution to climate change? And we'll be extracting more oil from the Alberta tar sands and contributing to more greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, you know, I guess I just don't believe that. I believe we're going to use that amount of oil. We need liquid petroleum fuels for the things that we produce, for automotive in particular, forms of transportation. So it just it doesn't really hold a lot of water for me. Sorry about the pun. For me, it would really mean that we would be again relying on foreign, not North American oil to meet our needs. I don't think that this one pipeline changes anything in terms of use patterns and demand for oil.
So basically, if we don't get it here, we're going to have to get it somewhere else.
Yep. That's exactly it.
Well, is there anything that I'm missing that you want to add, Brian, as it relates to this project moving forward?
Well, you know, I'd really like to stress some of the benefits. I already mentioned the taxes of local and state taxes of $25 million a year, the 8,600 jobs associated with building this project, the fact that our local tradespeople who are today traveling to places like Ohio where pipeline construction is happening, or Oklahoma where pipeline construction is happening, will be able to do this project and have a couple of years at home with their families. That's huge. What a benefit to those families. What a benefit to our region to have those people, skilled tradespeople who have to travel for their job, be able to travel 50 miles instead of thousands of miles away to do the work that they're trained to do. You know, those things are really important factors in this they're not the primary factors, but they're certainly really important benefits of going forward with this project. And so I'm really excited about it.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me about this, Brian. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Thank you for calling. And, you know, I really hope that now over the next few months, there are some ways to bring the community together around this and time to heal instead of some of the threats of escalating violence and taking it to a new level. I really thought that was a sad part of these last few days, and even a sad part of things that I heard in the commentary in the hearings earlier this year, the threats of violence. And I hope that instead people figure out a way to together heal and move forward.
Again, you were just listening to Brian Hansen with the business and development organization APEX. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll hear about how the commission's decision may impact the flow of oil in Wisconsin. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio.
91.3 FM KUWS Superior is proud to present 91 Jazz Street, weekdays from 7 to 10 p.m. Our student-run local radio show provides great jazz entertainment, plus gives you updates regarding campus events and other happenings in the Twin Ports area. Tune in weekdays at 7 and listen to 91 Jazz Street on 91.3 FM KUWS Superior.
Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this last Friday in June. In this hour, we're talking about a decision by the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission to approve a certificate of need for Enbridge Energy's $2.9 billion Line 3 replacement project. The 1960s-era pipeline carries up to 390,000 barrels of oil per day from Canada to Enbridge's terminal in Superior. Commissioners say the line is rapidly deteriorating. The replacement pipeline would send up to 760,000 barrels of oil per day to Enbridge's terminal in Superior. Peter Anderson is concerned what that may mean for the amount of oil flowing through Wisconsin. He's with 350 Madison, a grassroots citizen action group on climate change. He spoke with me yesterday by phone about the commission's decision and his worries for the Badger State and beyond.
In the global level, it's a tragedy when our institutions are unable to grapple with the crisis we face for the simple fact that it appears to be a looming crisis in the future as opposed to one that's over our heads today. And it's an unfortunate way our human synapses fail to reckon with exigencies that are ones that are going to be fatal if we don't act soon. We know, according to the science, that if we don't get off all fossil fuels in the next 20 years, we will have no chance to avert a climate calamity. And what we're doing here in the case of what Minnesota did in the terms of the global picture is when we have to get off fossil fuels, they're giving their rubber stamp to allowing the Alberta tar sands to be opened up for development even further than they presently are. And so there's two things that are takeaways there, if I could, Danielle. One is we have to, at the same time, we just shut off all of our exploitation of fossil fuels. We're opening up a field in Alberta, a tar sands field, that is the third largest oil reserve in the world. And number two, we are doing so with an oil field that is so terribly, we're doing so with an oil field that is tar sands and has to be extracted not by pumps, but by using enormous volumes of steam and poison chemicals that produce three times the amount of climate warming gases than with a conventional oil. So it's really something that is terribly insane and it's disturbing. For us here in Wisconsin, if that line is built and there are some more impediments that still lie in the way of whether it will be, we won't know. But if that line were opened, it would add about 350 to 400,000 more barrels of oil coming into Superior, Wisconsin every day. So unless Enbridge intends to pour that oil into Lake Superior, it's going to force construction of another tar sands pipeline called Line 66 through Wisconsin with all the risks that these kinds of tar sands oil piping entail.
So basically, your concern is that this means more oil is going to be coming across the state, whether it stays here or heads off to other states or shippers across the Gulf or, you know, across the nation.
Well, a large part of the tar sands oil does wind up being exported, and that's the point you're raising. But the nub of the matter is the tar sands oil should not be opened up by making more pipelines. You're allowed, because it's landlocked, you're allowing it to be opened up. It's going to also produce three times the amount of warming gases, and ultimately it's going to course through Wisconsin, crossing dozens of streams and rivers. And if it leaks here, as it has in the Kalamazoo, Michigan case, it could cause an environmental catastrophe in addition to the climate depredations that are going to ensue. And that's why, if it is built through Minnesota, you can be darn sure there'll be enormous opposition to the state of Wisconsin as well.
Well, and, you know, the commissioners during their deliberations, they expressed a lot of conflict and feelings of being torn over, you know, granting a certificate of need for this project because they realize that there's a shift happening right now from fossil fuels to other types of energy. But they said that the transportation sector hadn't caught up and that, frankly, the rule of law also tied their hands as to what they would be able to do or what they had the authority to do. So I guess, what do you make of that? You know, just do we need more updated laws as it relates to developments or projects like this?
No, we need to have people appointed to high office who have vertebrae. This kind of hand-wringing is just a crude way of saying I don't have the guts to do something substantive that is compelled. There's a strong case that there's no need for this pipeline. It was made in the record, and it was made by, as well as by the interveners, it was made by the state's Department of Environmental of Commerce. And the case for need is very marginal. They have the powers to do it. It's simply a fact that systemic to all environmental regulatory agencies, they almost never, ever challenge the business model of the permit applicant. They're not able to do it because they don't have the political courage. And it's kind of insulting to the public for them to claim they only wish, gosh, golly, gee, if they had more authority, they would get the cojones to act. I don't accept that. I don't think anyone who's engaged with this issue in Minnesota accepts it either.
The commissioners had also raised a point about the condition of this pipeline. As you know, it was built in the 1960s, and it has thousands of anomalies in pipe joints where some of them are corroded down to more than half of the depth of the pipe, posing a risk that they say causes real danger to the environment and cultural resources that would be impacted if it were left in the ground. So what do you make of that?
That's exactly why, and I want to, in some extent, give some credit to the commission. I expect tomorrow that while they capitulated today on the big picture issue, it is extremely likely that they'll go forward with a number of important and critical conditions, one of which is a requirement that they pull the existing pipe out of the ground and remediate those places where it leaked and contaminated the soil and the groundwater. And if, as I expect, they impose that requirement, that would resolve that. But of course, going along with it, they have to also say that that pipe has to be decommissioned. Now that gets into an area where there is a valid claim that it gets complicated because on the one hand, the states like Minnesota or Wisconsin cannot act as a safety regulator. That has been a power that has been preempted federally. On the other hand, in terms of environmental leaks and seeps that are occurring right now, they can act. And they can impose requirements for cleanup now that even if, because of federal preemption, they couldn't directly order the existing line shut down, I believe the conditions that they could impose to protect the leakages occurring now and the groundwater would allow them to indirectly force that existing line 3 to be shut down. So yes, you identified a very important point that Line 3 is a disaster waiting to happen, but the remedy is not to build a new pipeline that also can leak. Remember, one of the major leaks in the Great Plains and the Keystone Pipeline that happened last year was a pipeline that was only 5 years old. Just because it's new doesn't mean they're safe either. So I think, yes, to your question, Line 3 is an accident waiting to be happened, but no, the remedy is not to build a new one that's going to also have leaks, but to say the era of more expanding fossil fuels is over. It's time to wean ourselves off this addiction before we make an overheated world so inhospitable to modern civilization. Our children won't be able to live the lives that we have. If we care about our children, we cannot keep postponing and kicking this can down the road. And it's very, very shocking that the Minnesota Commission is unable, with an existential challenge to the lives of those to come, even then is unable to act because they're just invertebrate. It's just so sad, a situation. And I know our colleagues in Minnesota who've been fighting this issue are terribly disappointed, and we in Wisconsin join them in their sorrow.
What do you expect will happen next? Are you expecting legal action?
I think it all depends upon what the shape of that order is. I would assume, but I could not speak for Minnesota, and it's only they could not speak until they see the order, but litigation certainly is a high option. I also want to add, though, there's one other thing that needs to be understood, and that is tomorrow they're going to have to decide what route to allow to be built. And if it's a route that's too expensive, the company may decide the risks are too high. And then also, there are going to be a number of conditions up for consideration that would not bar construction, but in order to protect the public and taxpayer in Minnesota, would make it much more onerous for them to proceed. And you have to remember there are two ways of winning a battle such as this. One is in a major battlefield, and you win the day's battle, and they sign a peace treaty, and they go away. But the other way is cumulative wounds that occur and accumulate over time and make it impossible for them to go on. That's kind of what happened, as an example, in the nuclear power industry fight. There was no simple, single moratorium on nuclear power in this country. It was the cumulative wounds that were financially expensive that, in the end, sent that industry down the toilet. And it could happen here as well.
Well, speaking of finances, I mean, you mentioned that there's conditions that could be imposed now. And one of the things that the commissioners were talking about in their deliberations was financial protections for Minnesota related to construction of a new pipeline or a replacement pipeline, Line 3.
Yes, exactly.
I know this is something that you have examined and that Dane County in Wisconsin has examined as the expansion took place with Line 61. I mean, are there things that Wisconsin and Minnesota can learn from one another throughout this process as they're looking to protect citizens from the potential of spills related to oil pipelines?
Exactly. A very good point. Although, as I mentioned before, we cannot impose safety requirements on this pipeline, even if we think the federal regulators are inadequate. On the other hand, we can take action such that if there were an accident, as is often the case, and if it was a very expensive accident, especially when it's in the future, at a time when they're going to be very weak in companies, you know, there have been every single major coal company has now gone bankrupt. These were major behemoths a couple of years ago, and every one of them is in bankrupt. The same thing is coming next for the oil industry. And in the future, if there's a major accident, like the one in Kalamazoo in 2010 that cost $1.2 billion to only partially clean up, who's going to clean them up if they're weakened, if they're going through bankruptcy and other kinds of machinations to shed their liabilities in the future, as the coal industry experience teaches us is coming around the corner? Are we going to be on the hook for billion-dollar cleanups? Well, what Dane County did presciently in 2015 was say, you cannot run oil through this pipeline unless you're going to carry cleanup insurance. And that's now going to litigation. And we just had a recently, on May 24th, a major success where the Court of Appeals upheld that decision. And I'm very proud to say that Minnesota saw that as one of the things happening. And the state agency, the Department of Commerce, made that as a recommendation, the same kind of thing we did here. And the commission, I think, is extraordinarily likely to adopt that. And what that means is if they do build the line, when that inevitable accident happens, that's a big one, it's in Wisconsin, at least we won't be in fear of the taxpayer being on the hook to bail them out.
Well, and you also mentioned the possibility of another pipeline being built through Wisconsin to accommodate more oil. You know, Enbridge in the past has said that they're not pursuing that avenue right now of a twin pipeline to Line 61. I mean, we all know that they sent out surveys to landowners to examine that possibility. They've said that their system can accommodate that oil. What do you say to that?
I say the numbers don't add up because the systems right now were expanded to meet the existing demand, and they don't have the capacity to absorb close to 400,000 new barrels of oil. And I think you also have to put in the equation, you did mention properly, so if they're not interested in another pipeline, if they can take care of it already, why the heck are they surveying the whole new corridor to do that? And then I would add to that point, why are they telling in the stockholders' meetings that they're going to build Line 66? The only one they're denying it to is the state of Wisconsin in order, I would say, to avoid having a political uprising occur any earlier than they have to. But I think no one who's an informed observer looks at the fact that they are doing the surveying, number one. Number two, that they have told their stockholders that they're going to be doing this Line 66. And number three, that they're going to be adding, if they can, through Minnesota, another close to 400,000 barrels a day. And to say that, that's Danielle, 400,000 barrels a day is a whole new pipeline. To say they can just squeeze into the existing one defies our furthest imagination. So I think in many respects, the ability for them to tell the truth is not excessive. They've also denied any role. You remember, in 2015, after the Dane County enacted its insurance requirement, a mysterious amendment appeared in the budget that they thought would exempt them from Dane County's regulation if it was drafted right, and it wasn't, unfortunately for us. And they said that this amendment that got stuck in the budget, these things we know from the John Doe investigation, costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy the legislature to get a budget amendment. It only affects one company, Enbridge, and Enbridge denies any role in it, as in someone else apparently who's not affected by it spent several hundred thousand dollars to get it passed. And I think while you certainly want to be respectful of a major company, $120 million company, their deviation from reality has been so frequent and so obvious and so blatant, it's difficult to afford them the credulity that these political statements have any truth to them.
Well, what do you want to see happen next now that the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission has at least approved the need for this project for now?
If the Line 3 goes through, if the route is one that they can afford to build in, my hope is that we can replicate, and it's kind of a synergistic, because part of the things, as we mentioned, that they did, that they're about to do in Minnesota is replicate what we did in Dane County. But I think if we also, as they are doing, do things like saying that the pipe has to be pulled out when it's done, that the people whose land is taken or an easement are not responsible for that leak if it leaves their land and hurts someone else. If we make them responsible, if we internalize their costs with these various market mechanisms like insurance and bonding, I think it's going to begin to weigh on them so heavily that even if we're not able to stop them from legally having the permits to construct, the economic cost ultimately that are the result of protecting the Wisconsin taxpayer may be the kiss of death for them. Because remember, we are on the cusp of a turning point and of fossil fuels being displaced by renewables. And at some point, they're going to have to pull the plug. We won't know without hindsight if this is the case, but we are keeping our fingers crossed.
Again, you were just listening to Peter Anderson with 350 Madison. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll hear from former State Senator Bob Jauch and 7th District Congressional candidate Dr. Brian Ewert. He's running as a Democrat against challenger Margaret Engebretson for Congressman Sean Duffy's seat this November. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio.
91 Jazz Street, weeknights starting at 7. Tune in for a student-produced program covering a variety of jazz artists and styles. 91 Jazz Street, weeknights at 7 on 91.3 FM, KUWS Superior.
Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Physician and former Marshfield Clinic CEO Brian Ewert is running as a Democrat in the 7th Congressional District race against Republican Congressman Sean Duffy. But first, Ewert and Polk County Attorney Margaret Engebretson will face off on the August 14th primary ballot. Ewert and former State Senator Bob Jauch spoke with me yesterday about their views on health care during a stop at St. Mary's Hospital in Superior.
I'm going to endorse Dr. Brian Ewert, a physician from the Marshfield Clinic for Congress against Sean Duffy, because over the last 25 years, Dr. Ewert has shown compassionate care for his patients at the Marshfield Clinic, and he offers a clear choice against Sean Duffy, who has spent his time creating chaos in the healthcare industry by attempting time and time again to abolish Obamacare without any constructive alternative to ensure people have care. I don't think anyone argues that Congress needs leaders who are going to pay attention to the facts and apply knowledge to solving complicated issues. As a physician, Dr. Ewert doesn't have the luxury of playing games with people's lives. His decisions will determine many times whether they live or die. And it's time that we have people in Congress who apply that same mentality to solving America's complicated issues like health care.
Well, and Brian, being that you're a physician, I guess what do you want to see Congress do to improve health care for Americans?
I want to make sure that all Americans are able to recognize their right to affordable and universal health care. Now, every day for 25 years, I have cared for the people of the 7th Congressional District as a doctor, and I have served them as a health care leader. And I see that running for Congress is a continuation of that, because last summer I saw how the current Congress was trying to destroy and dismantle and hurt the very patients who I've committed my life to caring for. So that motivated me to get into this race to run for Congress so that I could continue to care for the people of the 7th District and make sure that they have affordable and universal health care.
What stories have you heard then from patients that you've treated about the impacts that congressional policy has had on their lives related to health care?
I think one of the major concerns is the current attack on not protecting people with pre-existing conditions. I'm a kidney doctor, so every patient I take care of has a pre-existing condition. These are the people who desperately need health care to stay alive. Currently, there is an attack on this so that people who actually have diseases would be prevented from getting the care they need. So that's what motivates me to be here, is to make sure that I continue to advocate for all people. Of course, that extends even to children who once upon a time had cancer would be excluded from health care coverage if the current trends continue. It's very important to protect everyone who has ever had a diagnosis, that they can continue to get the care they need. It's also crucial that we continue to work on decreasing the costs. Pharmaceutical industry is currently clearly taking advantage of those in America who need pharmaceutical care. And the costs are over twice as high in this country as other countries. What we need to do is make sure that we protect those in America from being ripped off by overpriced drugs. So I think that's a key part of further changes, where we protect the very people who we are called on to serve.
So I guess what makes you stand out from your Democratic opponent, Margaret Engebretson, and then your Republican opponent, Sean Duffy?
Well, I think in terms of Margaret, first of all, Margaret and I are very much aligned on our values. And I think we do represent these core values of strengthening our communities. I think the difference is I have a lifetime of service and care for the people of the 7th District. I also have a lifetime of leadership service. And so it's not only seeing the problems, but having crafted and created the solutions to those problems. And certainly having those leadership qualities and the ability to accomplish those goals recognized through Senator Jock's endorsement, through Congressman Obie's endorsement, through Mary Heff's endorsement yesterday, all are an excellent affirmation of my leadership skills and the ability to get the work done to solve the problems. In terms of Congressman Duffy, he has done nothing for 8 years to benefit the people of the northern Wisconsin, except in that he has tried to take away the very health care they need. He has had 8 years to advocate for different solutions. We've seen nothing. Last summer, he voted for the law that would take away health care from the very people he was called on to serve. So I think it is crucial that the people of the northern Wisconsin be represented in Congress who has the people's interests at heart.
Well, Congressman Duffy has said related to the changes in health care that that has caused a significant burden for some people with increases in premiums and has hurt small business owners. What would you say to that?
Well, first of all, the Affordable Care Act can be strengthened, but instead of strengthening it, he has only advocated for its destruction. There are over 30,000 people in his district who have gained health care because of the Affordable Care Act, and he seeks to take away the health care from those people. We can certainly continue to work to decrease the burden of high deductible health plans. We can work to make sure that all have affordable and universal health care, but that's creating solutions, not destroying the health care that people currently have. So all I have heard from him and his proposals is to destroy what already exists. I have not heard how he's going to create an alternative that strengthens our communities.
Well, and I also wanted to ask you, because Congressman Duffy was here just a week ago stumping for President Donald Trump and the Republican base and trying to stir up that base for turning out to the midterm elections this fall. What do you make of his support for President Trump and also some of the current things that are going on right now in the country related to immigration and other factors?
Well, I think the most important thing is to represent the interests of the 7th District. As we've already talked about, the health care ones are crucial. I think you mentioned immigration. I think it's absolutely critical that our core values are respected, whether it's domestic policy or foreign policy. One of those core values is that we reject cruel and unusual punishment. Separating toddlers from their mothers clearly counts as cruel and unusual. Immigration is an excellent example of the failure of the current Congress. In 2013, they had the opportunity to pass a bipartisan bill, and the House of Representatives failed to even consider the legislation that had been passed by the Senate. Just yesterday, the House of Representatives, again, failed the American people by not crafting supportive community-strengthening immigration reform. So I think that's why we need a change in Congress, because there are problems that need to be solved. Those solutions need to be created.
Well, is there anything I'm missing that either of you would like to add about your visit to Superior today?
Certainly one of the absolute joys of campaigning is getting out into the communities, meeting people, hearing their concerns, knowing that making sure that people with pre-existing conditions continue to be protected, knowing that people need affordable universal health care, our children need education, our infrastructure needs to be strengthened, including broadband access for all. Hearing all those stories is what inspires me to continue on to campaign for the 7th Congressional District and work towards a victory in November.
Again, you were just listening to physician and former Marshfield Clinic CEO Brian Ewart. He's a Democrat vying for the 7th Congressional District seat. You can see WPR's coverage of the candidates and read more about Congressman Sean Duffy's stance on health care at WPR.org. Up next, we review news of the week. Recent heavy rains damaged a number of major highways in northern Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation is set to begin repairs as waters subside. U.S. Highway 2 going east to west and U.S. Highway 53 heading north to south are among roads that have been impacted. The Wisconsin DOT says contractors are on site to repair the washout near Ino on U.S. 2 this week. The project is expected to cost $2.2 million and be finished by August of this year. Meanwhile, four-lane Highway 53 is down to two lanes going north and south by Solon Springs. The DOT says they expect to restore Highway 53 to four lanes in time for the 4th of July. That project will cost around $170,000 to repair culverts that have been washed out. And crews are working on a roughly $1 million project to repair a washed-out bridge over the Black River on Highway 35. The DOT says they also expect to repair the road in time for the 4th. Some areas of state and federal properties are closed to the public as officials assess damage from recent flooding in northern Wisconsin. Several state parks are seeing damage to trails, bridges, and beaches. At Patterson State Park, south of Superior, all trails are closed and some are still underwater. Missy Van Landit with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says the dam on Interfalls Lake was also ruined.
We need to repair that by putting in sheet piling, and in order to do that, we need to draw down the lake. And so we're going to be drawing it down to do repairs on the dam and repairs to the Highway 35 bridge.
Van Landit says repairs may take 4 to 8 weeks, but she says many trails and campgrounds are accessible at other state parks. More than 50 miles of road and trail have been damaged by flooding in the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, but all campgrounds there are open. The Superior Telegram reports a former city councilor will spend 2 years on probation and 30 days in jail for pointing a loaded gun at his former fiance. 27-year-old Graham Garfield pleaded no contest to charges stemming from the April 20th incident last year. Garfield resigned his council position last year after calls he should step down. The Telegram reports that he reached a 4-year deferred conviction agreement. That means if Garfield complies with his probation, a felony charge against him would be reduced to a misdemeanor. One northern Wisconsin county plans to ask voters this August whether they would support raising property taxes to pay for services. Ashland County is putting a referendum before residents because of rising costs due mostly to meth use. The number of drug-related felonies in Ashland County rose from about 120 in 2011 to around 300 last year. The county's administrator, Jeff Burrell, says they'd like to increase the tax levy by about $1 million to pay for human services and law enforcement.
It's just not sustainable to keep covering these continued shortfalls out of the general fund because at some point in life, the general fund won't have any more money in it.
Burrell says they've used sales tax and timber revenues to cover budget shortfalls, but he says those sources of income have hit a plateau or been maxed out. The Wisconsin Counties Association says it's uncommon for counties to seek a referendum to exceed the levy limit. Ashland County will put the question before voters on the August 14th primary ballot. And that's the news of the week, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. You can also find us on iTunes under Hear Me Out. You've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next week. Until then, have a great weekend.